And before I introduce our speaker, I'd just like to go over a little something here. In 1957, a young man sat at a dining room table, possibly on his way to some mental institute because of his problems that were brought on from his father's alcoholism. He was trying to deal with it. This young man had tried to work the steps, traditions, slogans, and everything else, but he realized that there was one thing missing from all of this: fellowship. So while his parents were meeting in another part of the building, he got together with some other teenagers and formed a group. They almost immediately named this group Alateen. Since this first meeting, Alateen has grown to over 3,000 groups worldwide. And it's just amazing to me to listen to these kids work out their problems as I sit back and just be there for them. Having said that, it is my privilege to introduce one of those Alateens, Tasha W. from Sumter, South Carolina.
Hello, I'm Tasha and I'm from Sumter. That makes me feel better. It's kind of an icebreaker for me. I didn't practice nothing. I didn't go over nothing. So whatever comes out is by God's will and God's will only. So, I was born into an alcoholic family. My mother and father got divorced when I was one. And of course, being an alcoholic, you cling to people who are alcoholics too, or you cling to people who are just like you, needy and stuff like that. So when her and my dad split up, I don't know much about that. I was real young, but I do know that she met another man named Jimmy, and that became her convenient husband at the time. And I don't say that in a mean way. I say because alcohol is a disease, and you cling to one another, and convenience is what we basically live on. And he was a convenient husband. They were that partying kind of people. Let's get high, let's drink, let's do whatever. We lived out in the middle of absolutely nowhere. We lived in the middle of this little town in the middle of nowhere. And we had a little trailer in the middle of the woods, and that's all you seen. You didn't see no neighbors. The neighbors probably half a mile down the road. So when it was time to party or it was drinking time, everybody came to our house because it was nowhere. The cops couldn't get out there. Nobody could call the cops because you couldn't hear nothing. So it was the most convenient place for them to go. So, of course, we had all these alcoholics out there who are just, they're not social alcoholics, but when they get together, it's a social party. Everybody talks, and then they get drunk, and then everybody fights, and then they go home, and then the next night, everybody comes back. So I can remember living out there, and my mother was one of them alcoholics who, okay, I drink, it's okay for me to drink, but you're not going to drink. So when Jimmy would get drunk, I'm going to pay you kid $5, don't say nothing to your mama. So we got $5 in, we told mama, so we were doing the good deed. And then, of course, it's a pattern that they get into routine of doing. So every night it'd be the same thing. Me and Michael would be outside. Mama would be in the house drinking with her buddies. Jimmy's outside drinking with his buddies. And me and Michael are just kind of all in the mix of it. And we go outside to Jimmy. Here's some money. Go back inside to Mama. Mama goes outside, starts a big old fight. Everything is happy. Everybody goes to bed. And that was the routine every night. And the funny thing is he never caught on to the fact that me and Michael were telling Mama. You know, he paid us every night to do the same thing, which is be quiet, but he never figured out how Mama knew. And I was like, you know what, this is kind of nice. I got money, I can walk down to the school, walk down to the store, get my candy, come home, nobody knows, I'm innocent. And then I remember from that point on, I can remember little stuff here and there, but from that point on I can remember At first, it wasn't so bad living with the alcoholics because, you know, you got what you wanted when you wanted it because it was about keeping them happy and out of our way. If we kept the kids happy and we kept the kids out of our way, then we can do whatever we want to when we want to. And Mama was I guess the social drinker. When everybody was there, she was drinking because when she wasn't there, she was working. When she came home, she got drunk, passed out by the toilet. That was it. Next morning, she was going to work, come home, passed out by the toilet. So that was me and Michael's picture of Mama. There's Mama. You know, where's your mama? She's by the toilet, you know. So that's what we got used to. And, of course, it became a thing of we had no rules or regulations. We had no boundaries. So basically it became a battle between ourselves. Who was going to be the adult and who was going to be the kid? And being so young, we had no idea what raising a family was like or anything like that. So me and Michael basically clinged to each other. And we did have these people who lived down the road who were the most gracious people I have ever met, because if me and Michael were hungry and Mama and Jimmy weren't home or Jimmy was passed out and Mom was at work, we'd run down the road. And these people would feed us and they, you know, they'd do whatever they wanted to for us. More or less, back then, they were the parents that we should have had. But then we had, you know, the other parents too. And then I can remember going to school. And the little kids were like, we had the little kids that lived up the road, and they were like, let's go to your house today. And I was like, well, you can't. You know, my mom and dad's not home. And they're like, well, your mom and dad's gone every day. And I said, yeah, I know. You know, my mom's an astronaut. She's gone to the moon. She won't be back for a while. You know, and it was something every day. It was a story of, you know, and whatever these kids said, because they lived in, you know, quote, unquote, these happy homes and nobody had any problems, that I didn't want to take them to my home where, you know, my parents are falling over everywhere and stumbling and, you know, talking like this, and you know, can't understand what they're saying. I didn't want to bring these kids into a home that I wasn't particularly happy in myself. So I would make up these dramatic stories so that I wouldn't have to embarrass myself like that. And I can remember going to school and getting off, and everybody knew. It's not something that you can hide, because it's something that goes on. It's not, when they say it's a family disease, it's a family disease. Me and Michael did not drink ourselves, but because of their drinking, it had a big effect on us, and we didn't know how to be kids. So when we go to school, it was, you can't do this and you can't do that. And they're like, you're not my mama. And I'm like, wait a minute, I'm not. But I am his mama, and he can't do that. So I basically took over being Michael's mama, even though I'm a year younger. If Michael needed something, I was getting it. If it came out of Mama's purse, I didn't care. If whatever he needed, I found a way to get it, and it did not matter. Well, then, of course, Mama decides that Jimmy's an alcoholic, and Jimmy's going into the program. And he's going in whether he wants to or not, because if he doesn't go in, she's leaving him. Because he got to the point where Mama was packing me and Michael up every day, every night, and was taking us somewhere to spend the night. And one night, he got out of control, and he pulled the shotgun out, and he was swearing up and down. He was seeing this big old lion, and he was telling Mama to shoot him. And me and Michael weren't there, she probably would have. So Mama packed us up, and she moved us away, and then she moved us back, and it was time for Jimmy to get treatment for his alcoholism, but she wasn't going to do nothing. You know, he's the problem, he's the drinker, he's going, so we sent him to Charter River. And he goes there, and of course, you know, he gets sober while he's in there, and Mama's like, this is good, you know, but something's going on here. There's still a problem. But of course, he comes back, he starts drinking again. So the whole routine starts over again. And finally, she decides that she was going to leave him. And I think the point that made her decide that she was going to leave him is she went to Mexico. And when she came back from Mexico, I told her that Jimmy had done something and I did not feel comfortable with it. And when she confronted him with it, he said that we were playing around. And when she did that, and I think in her mind she knew, but she wasn't real sure, because I did not come out and say, Mama, you know, Jimmy's molesting me, because I didn't know. When something is happening to you and you're little, you believe anything everybody says, especially when you're needy. And when he'd say, if you tell your mom, I'm going to beat your butt, I'd say, all right, Mama, don't know. And then when I did finally step up to the plate and say, hey, Mama, I didn't know how to tell her, so I just said that he was rubbing up against me. And she did say something to him, but I didn't see it, and I didn't see the effort of her leaving, so I really gained a lot of, I wouldn't say hate, but a lot of angry feelings towards her. And I couldn't even stand to be in the same room with her and Jimmy at the same time, because I look at him and I see my mama, who's supposed to be helping me, and then this man that she's married to, who has the disease, not knowing that she is just as bad off as he is. And I can remember thinking, well, if he's supposed to be my daddy, why is he doing it and letting other people do it too? Well, you know, okay, if that's how it goes, then okay, you know. And I can remember that he always treated Michael worse than he treated me, or I thought. He always, you know, Michael would do stuff like bust out the car windows that we had in the yard and spray paint the boat and, you know, stuff like that. But no matter what Michael did, I said, no, I did it. Because I always thought that I got off easier than he did. Because Michael would get switches and stuff, and I just get a little rub here and there, and that was done. And then I can remember Jimmy used to do stuff like make us run through the yard and he'd shoot BB guns and stuff at us. And I mean, we never said nothing. And I never said nothing to Mama because I already told her. And I didn't feel like she'd done anything, so I was like, what's the point of telling her more if nothing's going to get done? But I didn't see it going into play myself. I didn't see her. All I knew was I was going to the counselor every day at school. And I was sick of it. And I was like, I don't know what I'm doing here. You know, and she did try for the longest time to get me to say it, but if you're just in that predicament where you don't feel comfortable and you don't know what's going on, then you can't talk about it because you don't know. You don't know if it's right or wrong or not. And finally, Mama decides that she's going to leave Jimmy, but instead of Jimmy moving far, far away, he parked a camper right next to the trailer, and that's where he stayed. So I was like, okay, you know, he didn't really go that far. You know, he was still inside the house eating the food, doing all good stuff. He'd just maybe go next door to his little camper every now and then to take a nap. And so, it was some wild stuff. But I can remember when she finally, before she had decided to, you know, go ahead and boot him off the property and everything, which I can't remember. I can't really remember if he ever really left or if a new man came in. And my mama was married 4 times. And she was married to alcoholics and addicts every time. And instead of her seeing a problem with herself, she was seeing a problem with them. And the reason that she was seeing the problem with them is she was seeing the spit image of herself. And she wasn't happy with what they were doing or what she was seeing. So she was leaving them and trying to comfort herself by somebody else. And just because she was married 4 times, she's a wonderful, wonderful person. And this child was coming in before Jimmy had even left the property. You know, before he was even gone, you know, he was all mad because Jimmy wouldn't fix the flat tire, or Jimmy wouldn't do this, or Jimmy wouldn't do that. So he goes and buys Mama a little car and all this stuff. And of course, I don't like him. Michael don't like him. Nobody likes him. You know, he's new. And so finally, we don't leave. I mean, Jimmy doesn't leave. We leave. But we move in with this man on Church Street. And I'm like, okay, you know, all right, you know, another man, another time, you know, somebody else. And I mean, I flat out was like, I'm not going to like him whether he's a good guy or not. And she really hadn't gotten into the program then before she even decided to take on this new challenge. And finally, she did decide that enough was enough, and she was going to go into the program. And she started into the program, and she started in Al-Anon first to get help for the alcoholics that she'd been living with. And then finally, something went off in her head and said, you know what? I'm an alcoholic. And she got into the program, and her and Les decided they were going to move in with each other, and that me and Michael were going to, we were attending Alateen at the time, because it was like a forceful thing. I'm getting help, you're going to get help too. So we were attending this Alateen program, and we were one of the first kids in our home group. So basically what me and Michael do is we go in there, we'd run around, we'd harass everybody, then we'd go home, come back the next week, run around, harass everybody, go home. You know, because there wasn't really nothing for us to do. There wasn't a program for the teens yet, or kids. So Mama gets help, we moved in with Les, and me and I know I was one of the most spiteful and hateful kids I have ever met in my entire life. And Mom and Les, I couldn't stand either one of them. And Mama's like, I'm going to take over, I'm the mom. And I'm like, no, you're not. I'm the mama. I didn't birth him, but he's mine. And it came just, you know, she got help and she decided that she was going to take over and take everything away from me that I ever knew and was going to start playing the part, and that was not going over very well. And I can remember she put me on restriction one time because I'd done something I've always done. And she put me on restriction and I said, you know what, you leave this house and I'm running away. So she didn't pay no attention to me. She left, she went to Walmart and knocked right out the back door and ran down the block to her work. And they called her and they said, Agnes, we have your daughter here. And she's like, I'm going to kill her, you know. And I did a smart thing. I ran right down the road where I know everybody knows her. You know, it's an easy way. I think I was out for humiliation. You know, she humiliated me by putting me on restriction in my house. So I was going to turn around and I was going to do the same thing to her. And we got home and we fought and we did this for the longest time. And I still to this day say, Michael doesn't need to be doing this and Michael doesn't need to be doing that. And Mom's like, I'm the mom. And I'm like, oh yeah. Yeah. It's still a constant battle because I did it for so long. And then here she comes out of the blue, wants to do her, you know, be the mother figure, all that stuff. And everybody was like, nope. You know, I can't stand you. Don't come. You know, this is my room. Don't come in my territory. I won't come in yours. And Les ain't nothing but this and this and this and this. And he doesn't know what he's doing. And he just wants this and this. And, he, you know, and I don't know how the poor man stayed with the family dealing with me and Michael. And then I hated my sister because my sister had her daddy and I didn't have my daddy. And then I hate my sister because my sister, I thought she had the mama's love and the relationship with the mama that I always wanted, so I hated everybody. And then right when I got okay with the situation of Mom and Les being together and all that stuff, they split up. And I said, well, dang, you know, I like this man now, and he's booting us out. You know, what happened to Mama booting him out? So we were still going out and all that stuff, so we moved, and they had the worst habit of moving people in. You know, it can never just be Mama, Les, and the kids, or Mama's kids. It was always somebody else. And they moved this person in on Church Street who was an alcoholic. They were sending him somewhere in Columbia to get help. But while he was there, me and Michael were absolutely amazed because he could show us all these card tricks and tell us about his drinking days and all this stuff. Then we move in on Church Street. We move somewhere else, and this woman doesn't have heat or anything in her house, so Mama moves, you know, well, you can come stay with us for the week. Well, she starts staying permanently because Mama's working all the time. So there was still, even though she was trying to do the mother figure, she was still never around enough for us to really get a connection. So she moves this woman in, and this woman moves her daughter in into this little old house. You know, it's three bedrooms. Mama's got her bedroom. Michael's got his room. Then Brandy decides that she's coming to stay. So we have all these people in this one little house, and we don't really even know this woman. And Mama's gone to work all the time. When she comes home, me and Michael are usually in the bed, and we don't ever get to see her. And this woman's telling us what we can and cannot do. And I hadn't been adjusted to my mama telling me what I can and cannot do. And do you think I'm going to let you come in here and tell me I can and cannot do something? Well, then she decides this stuff where she's going to pick a fight with Michael every day. And I hated her gut, and I wanted her out. But then I wanted her to stay because she was there, you know. And if I needed somebody, I could say, hey, you know. So I hated her, but I wanted her to stay. I wanted her to go. I didn't know what I wanted. I was confused. And when she started a fight with Michael, I would start a fight with her, and I'd call her every name in the book because that's what I heard all my life, so why not? You know, it was okay. I mean, I called her some names I don't even think are in the book, even exist. You know, I made up my own words. And she started a fight with Michael. I started a fight with her. Michael would leave. She would leave. Or I would leave. And then around 11:30, 12, Michael would come back in. She'd come back in. Or I'd come back in. Everybody would go to bed. Me and Michael would go to school, come home, and we'd do the same thing. Then my grandpa died. And the whole family went into chaos with everybody instead of just us. So everybody was coming down from all the different states and stuff. And we're at the funeral, and my daddy shows up at the funeral drunk.
I hadn't seen this man but two or three times in my life, and here I am with somebody I consider to be my daddy, putting him in the ground, and this man just shows up out of nowhere, and he decides that he's going to come and be a part of what's going on. And I didn't see him, but my brother did. And they ran him off, of course, but when they told me, I was just like, how dare him even come here? And finally, you know, we buried him and all that stuff. And then Mama just gets this wild idea that her and Les are getting back together. So she was in the program, but she wasn't quite getting help yet. I mean, she was working on it, but she wasn't. I don't know how to explain it. She was sober, but there's something about when you hit your bottom, even as an Alateen, I hit my bottom. So hitting your bottom does not necessarily mean that you have to be drunk to hit your bottom, or you have to have a bottle. You hit your bottom spiritually. And I never really came up from the bottom, so I was still there. And she was up and down, like a roller coaster ride. And she decided that she was moving back in with Les, and with all the hours that she was working, when she would get off work, she'd come grab some clothes and she'd go to his house and stay the night. So me and Michael were still stuck there with this woman that we absolutely hated. And we were living right across the street from the children's home that we had been in before, that we were only supposed to stay in for a month and stay there for a year. So we're stuck. And so everywhere that we've moved away from the problems that existed right there. But when we moved right in front of this children's home, and we seen this, you know, the kids that were just like us when we were in there, we'd sneak on the fence and do stuff like play with them and stuff like that. But it was like, you know, I was there too. And there was no shame in saying I was there, because these kids were there, and I was like, hey, I was here, you know. And my mama came and got me, and I'm right next door. And her and Les decided that they were going to move back in together, and we moved back to Church Street, and it was still an uphill battle, but we were starting to get along, and the whole family was starting to get help and all this stuff. And then Michael starts getting in a lot of trouble, or gets in a lot of trouble that everybody notices, doing stuff like drinking all the time and, you know, getting in trouble at school with teachers and stuff like that. So finally, Mama said, I can't control you no more. I'm going to send you to your daddy in Charleston. Well, Michael, I don't know the man. Michael doesn't know the man. And Michael knows him better than I do. I always thought he hated my guts, because when I was younger, he called Grandma's house, and he said, I don't want to talk to you. You're nothing but a little bee. Let me talk to my son. And I was like, okay. And ever since then, I hadn't talked to him. And Michael was going down there to spend all this time with this man, and I was so envious, and I hated him too. The only person that I had, I was starting to hate, because he was leaving me too, and he was leaving me in a situation where I have a mama, but I don't really know my mama, and here's this man who's trying to play the role of a daddy, and I don't want a daddy, you know? And there were so many times I said, Mama, why can't it just go back to the three of us? Just me, you, and Michael. And Michael goes down here, and he spends this time with this man in Charleston, and he would call us every now and then, and he'd say, yeah, I'm doing this and this and this and this, and it's so great. And then my dad decides that he's had enough of Michael. He can't control Michael either, so he's going to send Michael back to Mom. And he sends Michael back, and Michael's supposed to be there for a month or so, but he sends Michael back in a couple weeks because he wants to go out on a fishing boat and get drunk. He wants to go get crabs or whatever. And he sends Michael back, and I was so mad when he sent Michael back, because Michael, his feelings were so hurt because he sent him back. And Les decided that he's gonna go down to Charleston, he's gonna kick his butt and da 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 da, you know. And I was just sitting, I mean, everybody's wreaking havoc, and I'm just sitting there. And he calls one day, and he's like, yeah, I can't control him, and da 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 da, and I just can't believe that he is the way he is. And I said, Daddy, I said, you know what? I said, you're my dad, but you're not my father. And I said, there's something different about that. I said, you helped Mama make me. I said, but I don't know you, and you don't know me. You don't know your son. I said, you have the title, don't play the part. So he hung up. Then he calls back, and he said, how dare you speak to me like that? He said, you have no respect for me. I said, well, how can I have respect for a man that I do not know? He hung up. He called back, and he said, I just can't believe that y'all would treat me the way y'all treat me. And I said, you know what? I said, if you were a stranger passing me on the street, I said, I still wouldn't know who you were. I said, so there is no respect, there is no love, there is no nothing. I said, I don't know you. I said, I'll never know you. And he hung up again, and he called back, and this became a routine. He called, and this is in one day. He called back, and I said, finally, I just said, Daddy, I said, there is something I want to know. I said, do you have AIDS? Because he came down to my grandma's house a couple years before, and he didn't. He was missing his teeth, and he was real skinny, and Michael was like 9 years old, slinging Daddy over his shoulders. And I said, Daddy, you know, you've never married again since you divorced my mama. Do you have AIDS? Click. He hung up, and that was it. And then he calls back a couple days later, and he tries to pull the guilt trip of, what are y'all doing? I said, I'm getting ready to eat. I got to go. And he's like, what are you eating? And I said, food. And he said, oh, you know, I'm not eating nothing and stuff. And I said, well, your bottle is your food. And I hung up. And we didn't talk for the longest time after that. And Les moved us to the lake, to one house, away from everybody. It was that control factor. He was sober, been in the program for a while, but it was that control factor. And he moved us to one house. Right after we moved into that house, we moved two lots down, and everything was fine. Everybody was finally getting along, going to the meetings, working the program, doing all that. We finally got to where we could really associate and be a family. On the weekends, my sister and my brother-in-law would come down, and we'd all watch movies and eat and all that stuff. And then, all of a sudden, you couldn't say nothing in the house. You couldn't do nothing. He was taking everybody out to eat, and he wouldn't take Michael out to eat no more, just me and Mama. Then he wouldn't take me out to eat no more, just Mama. And then he wouldn't take Mama out to eat. It was like a dropping everybody off little by little. And he would take these mysterious walks down the dirt road, and with his little black bag that he had, and then he'd come back, and you couldn't say nothing. It was like walking on eggshells in that house. And I was uncomfortable, and I told Mama, I said, you know, we were discussing what was going on, and I said, Mama, I don't want to be here no more. I said, I can't say nothing. I can't do nothing. I get fussed at for everything I do. I said, and I'm sick of it. And Mama said, well, if things aren't better in a couple of weeks, I'll let you go live with your grandma. Well, you know, I had given this man the right to act like my daddy or be my dad. And the kind of family that I was raised in, that's a privilege. You don't have a right. You know, you may help make these kids, but unless you participate in these kids' life, you don't have a right. If they want to give you the privilege of being there, then that's them. And I had given this man the privilege to be there for me, you know, and for me to be there for him. And then all of a sudden one night, me and Michael quit coming home. We'd make excuses, and we'd come home once we knew he was gone. And we'd come home, we'd sneak in, and we'd go to bed before he'd get home. Well, one Tuesday night, we were coming back, I think, from a meeting or somewhere, and we got in the house. We didn't see his truck, so we were like, okay, he's gone to a meeting. Me and Michael go inside, and Mama's like, I have something to tell y'all. And I already knew what was coming. And Mama's like, Les left. And the first thing I felt is, I said, I hate that fat SOB. You know, that's the first thing I thought, because I was like, it's not more or less me. How can you do that to my mama? You know? And even all the stuff that had happened and that she had done, I feel, you know, all them feelings of hate and all that had disappeared because she came into my life. She acted like my mama. So for somebody to treat her like that was just degrading. And come to find out that he was doing crack and he was sleeping around, buying hookers and doing all this stuff. And I was just like, I can't take this, you know. So me and Mom and Michael packed our stuff up, and we were going to move from Manning and with my grandmama. And I just got to where I couldn't even focus. Everything started going blurry. I didn't know where I was or what I was doing, and I was just so down in the dumps and depressed time. And I'd go to school and I'd fall asleep in the car before I got to school and never wake back up, and I'd miss school all day. So I didn't bother to call Mama or tell Mama what was going on. So finally one day I went to an Alateen meeting, and I talked to these kids, and for some reason they just really reached out and helped me that night. And I was driving the car home, and my mama was right in front of me. And I had then decided that I was going to pull that car off the road and try to hit the nearest tree that I could. That I didn't want to live that life no more. That I was going to kill myself. And I think the only thing that stopped me is because these kids had reached out to me. And I said, you know, maybe my life isn't that bad. And then I see my mama driving the van in front of me, and I see the brake lights. And I think that's the only thing that stopped me from yanking that car off the road. And I got home, and I didn't say nothing to her the first night. And we went to a meeting the next night. And on the way home, I said, Mama, I said, I was going to commit suicide last night or try to. And then I seen the brake lights of your van, and I couldn't do it. And Mama's like, well, you know what? We need to get you some help. And I said, yeah, I need some help. So we called the people in Columbia and went over there. I talked to psychiatrists. You know, they gave me this little sheet of paper to fill out all these answers to these questions. And they're like, answer honestly. So I was like, okay. I hate him. I would kill him. I would, you know. And the woman says, you know, Ms. McNeely, I need to talk to you. You know, I think we need to enroll your daughter in the hospital and keep her here for a while. And I was like, okay. And I go up to this floor, and I was like, well, can I go home and get my stuff so I can let everybody know that I'm, you know, that I'm not going to be here? Because given all the stuff that I had done and that had happened, I still wanted my family. And they were like, yeah, no, you can't ride, but when, you know, your mom brings your stuff back, we'll let you see her. She never let me, you know, they never let me see her, so I hated the people in the hospital. What good were they going to do me? You know, I fussed at the psychiatrist. He came in there, and he said, I talked to him. He said, well, I think your big problem is your mom's been married 4 times. And I said, sir, have you ever been married? He said, no. I said, well, I can see why. So they took me away, and they put me in this little room, because he was mad. And they took me away. They put me in this little room with this little blue mat on the floor. And the doctor comes back, and he says, you get her out of there. And then same psychiatrist the next day, I was talking to him, and made him mad again, so he sent me away again, and finally I got a new psychiatrist, and they helped me in a way, but there was a lot of unanswered issues that they couldn't deal with because I hadn't dealt with. So when I got out, I started going to my Alateen regularly, and I started working steps and all that stuff, and started getting help for myself, and everything started coming into reality. I didn't hate Mama no more. I didn't hate Michael no more. I didn't hate nobody. I didn't feel no, you know, I wasn't angry because she wasn't there for a long time. I was like, nope, I love my mama. And I love my mama because she got help. And she may have made some mistakes in her life, but she did the best to raise her family that she knew how through the disease. And she had a lot of guilt and stuff after she got sober, and I felt guilty for her having guilt. And I was like, that's really an issue I have to deal with. Because, you know, every time she'd get upset and cry, I'd get upset and cry because I didn't want to see her crying. You know, to me, she got sober, she was a strong woman. And she could do anything. And when Les left, she blossomed. It's like she didn't care no more. You know, she was sick and tired of it. She was getting herself some help, going to meetings and stuff like she was supposed to, going to church. And she just became this miraculous woman. And I've told so many people, I want to be like my mama. I want to skip all the alcohol and stuff, but I want to be like my mama. And I think the last major obstacle that I've had to deal with that my Alateen has really, really helped me deal with is I didn't talk to my dad for so many years. And then my sister's dad died. And when he died, it caught everybody off guard. And he was that kind of person that at Christmas and all that stuff, you seen him and you knew what was going on in his life all the time. You just, you know, there was a weird connection between me and him. And I could see him and Mama talking all the time, you know, and getting along. So we all became like a huge family. Everybody started working together and became a huge family. And then when he got in that boat accident and he died, I was like, oh, God, you know. And I didn't know how Brandy felt because I didn't, you know, I had no idea what a dad was like. So I couldn't put myself in her shoes, but I could, you know, I could feel the pain with her. And that very night that we put him in the ground, my dad called. I had written, my Alatina said, you got to be the first one to make amends and do all that stuff. And if you try and you get no response, at least you know you tried. So I had done this thing of write my dad a letter. I mailed it to him. I didn't hear from him for the longest time. I'd sent it like 2 months prior. And finally, on the day that my sister's dad died, he picks up the phone and he calls. And I was like, hey. And he was asking me all these questions and I didn't know what to say. And I was uncomfortable talking to him and all that stuff. And we decided that we were going to go down there and I was going to meet my daddy. And I hadn't seen this man. I don't know this man. I was 18 years old, which was last year, and it's the first time that I'm ever going to get to see my daddy sober. And the first time that he called me sober was when we buried my sister's dad. So we go down to Charleston. I figured when I seen him, I would be boo-hooing, and I would be so excited. And I seen him, and I was just like, huh. Hey. And he put his arms around me and give me a hug, and I just kind of jerked away. I was like, don't touch me, And we walked around, Charleston all day, and I talked to him, and I really didn't say nothing. And we go out to eat, and here's my mama and my daddy, and they're conversing back and forth, and I'm just sitting there like, yep, this is a real family affair. I didn't know what to do, and I said, okay. So mom's like, we're going to go back to the hotel, and we're going to, go ahead and go to bed now. And when we got there, I said, mama, I can't do this. I said, I feel so weird. I said, I don't know him. I can't, I don't like for him to be hugging me. Because we went back to the hotel room, and I was showing him some pictures of my friends and stuff, and he was patting me on the back, and I was like, don't touch me. And he was like, I've missed you, and I just love you so much. And I was like, you don't even know me. And I was just like, okay. And I was like, mama, I don't know what to do with this man. he's my daddy, or that's what he proclaims. But I don't know him. I don't know what to do with him. And so the next day, I seen him one more time, and he hugged me, and I just kind of patted him on the back a little bit. And I said, mama, I said, I'm going to try, but I don't know. I said, I don't like the idea. He's my daddy. He helped make me, and I look like him, but I don't like the idea of this man just putting his arms around me. I'm not comfortable with that. I don't know him. And mama's like, I understand. So we went home, and me and my dad have been writing letters back and forth, and we've been talking more and stuff like that. But I'm still fighting that battle of, okay, I think what scared me the most is he was actually sober, something I've prayed for my entire life. And then every time I would think, okay, I have a chance, he was, drunk again and all that stuff. And then when he actually got sober and stayed sober, I didn't know what to do with myself because I couldn't react to him anymore. I couldn't get mad and stomp my feet because he was out drinking again. So I really had nothing to complain about, nothing to fuss about. And that just ruined my whole aspect with my daddy. And, I was like, well, mama, I want to be able to fuss and complain. He's sober, but so what? And we finally got a relationship or building a relationship. And it's becoming stronger. There's still a lot of, I did the big thing of I wrote him a letter and I asked him if he would come here. But I think when I sent it like a week before I was supposed to be here, I think that was kind of my way of saying, I would like you to be there, but since I sent it so late and I even put in the letter, it might be too late for you to come, And I was like, well, I did a good thing. I invited him, but I'm not really ready for him to be here. And I was like, because, I haven't made total amends with this man yet. And Mama was saying yesterday in the car, she's like, why don't you say, I'm sorry for hating you all those years. Make your amends. And I said, I am not ready to do that. I don't want to say sorry to this man yet. And then I was like, work your program. I don't want to, you got these little voices in your head. Don't want to do it. Don't want to do it. And I think I have decided that I might not say I'm sorry, but I'll start working on telling them how much I did hate them and did despise them. And all them times I said, I just wish my daddy would go ahead and die so I could close that part of my life. And I'm thankful to this day that he's not dead, that I do have the opportunity to get to know him. And because of the program of AA, Al-Anon, and Alateen, I've gained so much hope for life. And now, instead of looking and saying, you know, my life was so bad, I look and I see all these other kids who are still living in the situation I am, and I say, my life isn't that bad. I got help. And I mean, I just love the program. I love the foundation. And one thing is this program has taught me how to love everybody and everything, but most of all, it's taught me how to love myself. And for it teaching me how to love myself, I can openly express my feelings as a person and feel no shame or regret for my life. Because if it wasn't for the life that my mama had given me, I would not be the person I am, and I wouldn't change nothing. And thank you for having me.